Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the Cancer Horizons podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, and healthcare professionals to do what CURE does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education.
When Angelia Carpenter was diagnosed with invasive ductal carcinoma in 2009, she thought she knew what to expect. After all, her mother was diagnosed with the same cancer just 4 years ago. She went to the doctor and followed the recommended steps.
I had 12 doses of chemo, and then I had 33 doses of radiation, and then I was back on Herceptin chemo for, I think, about 18 months. Just tootled along.
But everything changed 7 years later when she noticed what she thought was just a pimple on her breast.
Went to the doctor. And she said, it looked like a skin zit to me. So they put me on antibiotics. And I went back after 2 weeks, and it wasn't going away.
In today's episode of Cancer Horizons, the 62-year-old Missouri resident recounts her experience of being diagnosed with secondary agneosarcoma after undergoing breast cancer treatment, traveling to multiple oncologists to seek treatments for her extremely rare cancer, writing a book with her family about her experiences.
And I said, I want to find a book of a real life person, not a celebrity that has fought this, and we couldn't find it. So
right.
My mom and I decided to write a survivor's guide.
And her advice for fellow breast cancer survivors who might be in a similar situation.
And I think the best thing is for us to just be diligent and be aware. Tell me a little about you, like where do you live, what do you do, how old are you? I am 62 years old. Right now I live in New London, Missouri. I am a ministry assistant for the Baptist Church in New London, First Baptist Church. I had invasive ductal carcinoma in 2009 when I was diagnosed with that. My mom had been diagnosed with the same thing 4 years prior to that. I had 12 doses of chemo, and then I had 33 doses of radiation, and then I was back on Herceptin chemo for, I think, about 18 months. Just tootled along, you know, no problems. And 2016.
So that after all that treatment that you just described, the cancer was gone, and you were considered a survivor and moving on?
Yes.
Okay.
I was on maintenance. I was doing really well, was doing my yearly checkups with the oncologist and follow-up, and I noticed what looked like a pimple on the same breast that I'd had the breast cancer in, and I had had a lumpectomy.
But not a mastectomy.
But not a mastectomy with the breast cancer. And so I noticed that pimple and went to the doctor, and she said it looked like a skin zit to me, so they put me on antibiotics, and I went back after 2 weeks, and it wasn't going away. Fought with the insurance company because it had not been a year since my mammogram. So I finally got that, and they just, it's cancer. We think it's cancer, but they sent me to the surgeon, and when he looked at it, he's also the one that had done my lumpectomy, he said, I think it's a sarcoma.
Did you know what that was?
No. It was kind of scary, and when I looked at what he called it was lymphangiosarcoma, and when I looked it up to go to WebMD, the first thing that came up with lymphangiosarcoma was a cancer found prevalent in dogs. And that was just weird. That was weird to me that I have a cancer that dogs get. We talked to him. He said, I have one other patient that has this. She had a mastectomy. That's what I'm recommending. And she survived 5 years. I think, you know, if we do this mastectomy, you'll be fine. So I went back to my oncologist.
Did you know back when you had breast cancer originally, did you know that this was a risk of radiation?
No, it was probably in those papers somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But at the time, you're just so overwhelmed.
Yeah.
With everything. Mm-hmm. And I did go back and look, and it says at the bottom, less than 1% of patients who receive radiation may have other problems appear. So I just kind of trusted what my oncologist said to me, so my odds were better that it would not return if I did the chemo and radiation, and that's what I chose. When I went to the oncologist, she showed me a paper from the National Institute of Health that said prognosis 3 to 6 months, amputation is the best course of treatment. Mm-hmm. And my oncologist said, I have never seen this in the breast. I have seen it, sarcomas on arms or leg, but never in the breast. So this was the summer of 2016, and I was thinking this might be my last Christmas. But she did go on to tell me that my surgeon had done a fellowship in breast sarcomas. So I felt like he had the knowledge, and so I did the mastectomy and healed from that. They took lymph nodes. About 9 months later, I found a spot, another bruise-looking place above my mastectomy scar. I just went straight to the surgeon, and he said, yes, it has reoccurred. And so what he said was, we need to go in and take out more tissue. We've got to get this, and then I'm going to refer you to MD Anderson. I had surgery again, and they dug deep. I have a hole, and they took skin from my thigh, put it over that. So I was stitched, or they connected the stitches to my left breast, and I have a scar that goes from my left breast all the way under my arm. They sent me to MD Anderson, to the sarcoma center, started the chemo regimen.
So what were the treatments besides that additional surgery that you had?
It's called the AIM, and it's Adriamycin, and Ifosfamide, and then Mesna. I would go in on Monday morning, and they would take me into one of the little cubicle rooms and hook me up to my chemo. My first treatment I actually did in the hospital because I wasn't sure how I would react. And so they hooked me up on Monday morning, and I stayed through Friday. I had 24 hours. It was constantly going in. And then they took me off on Friday, and I had a new LASTA shot, and then I got to go home. And so that second week, I had to stay pretty much in isolation. And then the third week, I'd get to feeling a little bit better. And then the fourth week, the second round of it, I went back, did all my labs and everything. They hooked me up on Monday, sent me home with a backpack and a fanny pack of chemo, and went back on Tuesday, did a whole round in my little bedroom there at the hospital, and then they would give me another backpack and fanny pack, and so I did that Monday through Friday, and then we started the cycle all over again. After the third round of the ifosfamide, I started hallucinating one night and was very disoriented. That was the first time I had ever seen my husband scared. He looked in my eyes and he said, I think we need to call an ambulance. I remember them coming. I remember the guy asking me what my phone number was. I knew as I was saying it that it wasn't right, but I couldn't figure out what it was. And that was frustrating to me. And so when we got to the hospital, the first thing I asked the ER doctor was, have I had a stroke? I knew I wasn't okay, but I couldn't get everything to come out right. And we had gotten an IV pole to help me maneuver during the night and not have to put that backpack on and everything. Mm-hmm. And I had tripped over, I had fallen and tripped over the IV pole. So I'd broken a toe, and they decided that I had had too much of the, of that certain chemo. Mm-hmm. And they said, this one is very, very toxic. And rarely does anybody do the 6 rounds of it. And so they took me off of that one. When we went back to the oncologist in Houston, I asked her, I said, if I stop this, is it going to keep me from being clear? And she said, no, I think you have enough of it in your body, but I was willing to go ahead and chance it just to survive.
Mm-hmm.
So I went ahead and finished the other round, the 6 rounds of the other medicines, and I have been no evidence of disease since September 2017.
That is wonderful.
So I will go back in September, back to Houston, and get my 5-year clearance, and then I'll start yearly. We did the every 3 months I went back, and then I think I did that for 3 years, and then every 6 months. And so when I go back in September and get the all clear, I will have to go yearly. This, I will have to be monitored for life. Breast cancer, they usually release you after 10 years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I will be.
But the secondary angiosarcoma is more, that's what they have to do the more serious surveillance about.
Yes.
Yeah. And it sounds like it was aggressive because they did the mastectomy and then really quickly that one came back above the scar.
Right.
That sounds
right.
That's aggressive.
Right. And it's possible. We don't know. You know, maybe if I'd gone to MD Anderson the first time, that I wouldn't have had a second occurrence,
maybe. So but, did you feel like before you went to MD Anderson, because MD Anderson, of course, is a huge cancer center that people travel from all over the world to get treatment there. Did you feel like before you went to MD Anderson that you weren't seeing oncologists that had a lot of knowledge about this type of secondary cancer? Is that kind of the message I got from you?
Yeah. They didn't. But I have to give them credit. They knew they didn't, and so they were willing to send me somewhere else.
Right. Have you found, now, I don't know if this is something that you do, but I know that a lot of women, once they've had breast cancer, they're in all kinds of groups for people with breast cancer, and they meet a lot of other survivors. And so if that's been your situation, I wanted to know, how knowledgeable do you find that breast cancer survivors are about their risk for this secondary cancer?
I don't
you find
believe
this is something that people don't really know about?
No, I don't think they do. And I'll be honest, I'm hesitant to tell women who have breast cancer about it, that mine was probably radiation induced.
Right.
Or,
that's what the typical cause is, yeah.
Right. Because I don't want them not to do what's the best treatment for their breast cancer.
Right. And when you said, you know, you didn't know that this was a risk of radiation, I was wondering, well, even if you had, what are you going to do differently? If it's a 1% chance and they're telling you this is how we're going to cure your breast cancer, what choice does anybody have?
Right. I mean, if you're a survivor, if you have that fighting instinct in you, you're going to do whatever it is that you can do.
Well, and you're not going to not treat the current cancer in order to avoid a second cancer. You won't even live long enough to get that second cancer otherwise, right?
Right. And see, when because my mom had breast cancer, and she had a sister that had breast cancer and another sister with ovarian, and my dad's sister had breast cancer. So they sent me for genetic testing.
Do y'all have Mom the BRCA has. Gene?
No, neither one of us do. I have a sister that's currently going through breast cancer treatments. She has done her genetic testing, and she doesn't have the gene either. And so when I got the results back, they had me do a cancer family tree. And when they read those results back to me, they looked at that and they said, you are more likely to get colon cancer with your genetic makeup. Well, I've never had any problems that way. So, I mean, we just don't know what factors are going on. And when I was diagnosed with the breast cancer, I told my husband, I said, I want to go to the bookstore and first buy a journal because I journal and write my feelings, my thoughts. And I said, I want to find a book of a real life person, not a celebrity that has fought this and not the medical aspect. I want to know how a real life person deals with everything. And we couldn't find it. So my mom and I decided to write a survivor's guide. It's called From One Survivor to Another to Another to Another. And so Mom wrote her experience, and then I would counter with what my experience was. Some of them were very similar. Some of them weren't. And then we gave tips for the survivor and then for their caregivers, and then left a page for them to journal whatever they were going through. The last chapter, we asked our caregivers to write what their experience was. So my sister lived closer to my mom, and so she wrote about how she handled things. My husband wrote about me. So it was just an opportunity for us to share our real-life story and our real feelings.
So to educate breast cancer survivors about their risk for this, particularly breast cancer survivors who underwent radiation. And so I wanted to ask you, do you have any advice for that group of people? Is there some extra surveillance that you would recommend that they do, that they're always just aware of that breast that had the cancer, or, you know, or any advice at all for women in that group who might be at risk of this cancer and maybe have never heard of it?
Right. I would say just be diligent. Of course, with breast cancer, it's always the mammograms and the self-breast exam. But this presented itself as a small bruise, kind of a red bruise. So if anything looks off, if anything doesn't look right, if you're just concerned about the way something looks, call your doctor. Get to your doctor, and if you don't get the answers you want, then go ahead. It's okay to go somewhere else until you get definitive answers and are comfortable.
And do you have advice for women who might go through what you experienced, that they get to the doctor and the doctor doesn't seem to know a lot about that kind of cancer? Do you wish that maybe you had switched doctors right away?
No.
Okay.
No, because I had a lot of confidence in my doctor. And when I went to see my radiation oncologist, of course, word had spread. And he said to me, I have been an oncologist. I've been a radiation oncologist for 30 years, and you're only the second person I've seen with this.
Wow. So it's super rare.
So it's super rare, and I think the best thing is for us to just be diligent and be aware. And if you suspect that, then get to a sarcoma center where they know what they're doing. They know what the signs are, and they're just better equipped to deal with the rarity of the disease.
Yeah,
And if you have to travel to go to a sarcoma center, do that. And if your doctor at home is not willing to work with that sarcoma center, then you need to find another doctor at home too.
Right.
Because you have to be willing to partner together. Mm-hmm. Since we've moved to Missouri, we have a sarcoma center in St. Louis, which is under 2 hours from us. And so I see them on alternate visits when I don't go to Houston, and they're working together. Because at some point, I'm going to get too old to be traveling to Houston every year. So we wanted somebody close by. And my risk factor of another reoccurrence goes down. But they often say to me, it's not if, it's when it comes back.
Oh, wow. Well, that feels a little uncomfortable to live with.
Yes, but I've also learned I still have to live my life. I can't just sit here and wait for that to come back, because it may not, or something else could kill me. And I'm just going to continue to be diligent, to watch, and I do. And if I see something that looks funny around my scar, I immediately show it to my husband. We take pictures. We may circle it with a marker to see if it grows, and we just mm-hmm. kind of watch it.
Yeah.
And most of the time it's nothing, you know.
Right.
But we just have to be diligent.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cancer Horizons podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cancer Horizons podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter @cure_magazine or at Facebook @Cure Magazine.